The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, Jim and I are going to discuss and critique an article recently published by Kiplinger's Finance, I think is the full
Kiplinger's
title.
Personal Finance.
Personal Finance, that's right. Kiplinger's Personal Finance, entitled...
How do you pronounce it? I think I got you.
Kiplinger?
Oh, never mind. I misunderstood. It must have been the music.
Ah, could have been. But the article, anyway... It's called 12 Reasons You Will Go Bankrupt. I'm sorry.
Broke.
Not bankrupt. Forget that. Don't do that. 12 Reasons You Will Go Broke in Retirement.
Which is the same
thing. Also not
a
good idea. Also not a good idea. But there's a lot of reasons. They've got 12 here. We're going to discuss them. I personally haven't read the article. Should I admit that?
I think most listeners, dedicated listeners, know we kind of go into this not knowing what we're going to talk about until literally the music is playing. Well, probably a little bit before that.
Right.
And you very rarely know what's going on because I just don't generally share that with you.
Yeah. Well, it makes it more interesting for me. Plus a lot less pressure because I don't have to prepare for anything.
Makes it exciting because you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. So this show is going to play live for the first time. This is a pre-recorded show. We'll play live over the air for the first time on February 4th. We're actually recording this a little out of normal sequence. We're recording this on January 27th, so all of our references, historical references, are based on history to January 27th of 2017. If anything happens after this, it won't be mentioned on the show.
Yeah, if it's something major, people are going to be wondering, why aren't we talking about it?
Yeah, well, that's why. Because right now, the sun is shining, birds are chirping, we're all breathing. We're good. So, next week I'm going to be gone. That's why.
Yeah, I was going to say,
normally
where
record
are you going?
It Tuesday.
I have no idea where you're going.
Well, I have to serve...
jury duty?
A punishment, a form of duty.
You have to take your family somewhere?
No, I have to escort some students to a conference.
That's punishment?
In San Diego, California.
That's not punishment.
In January.
I'm sure your wife is really excited. Is she going with you?
Oh, no. No, she's not.
So the punishment is hers. She has to stay home with the brood.
That's My punishment is sarcastic. Hers is actual punishment, since she'll be in charge of the whole clan.
What symposium, seminar, study group you guys are going to?
TD Ameritrade invites students from different institutions around the country to their national conference every year, and they require that a faculty member escort them.
And that was you.
And that would be me. So I'm taking them out, and the students get to be exposed to all the different events that they have at this national conference where they get to meet lots of other people in the industry. They get to meet folks that supply services to these TD Ameritrade folks. So it isn't all just TD Ameritrade people out there, but it is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. So they'll get, I think they give them green jackets even that say TD
Ameritrade.
Like
the Masters.
Like the Masters, only TD Ameritrade style.
Cool.
So,
and do you get a green jacket?
I don't know. I might. I have a whole closet full of jackets I've gotten.
And then we might as well start dropping the news. Uh-oh. I think it's news. Aren't you going to Vietnam this summer?
Oh, yes, I am. Actually.
And that's with the college, too. Is students going to that?
We had talked about that a few years ago. I was going to go a few years ago, and it kind of got disrupted. So I didn't go, but I will be there most of the month of June this year. That I go and teach a class that lasts 4 weeks over there. There's a university in Hanoi that has a joint program with CSU. It's actually a joint program with the economics department, but the College of Business at CSU also gets involved because they offer a business minor in conjunction with the economics major that they receive. And it's students from here, a few actually do go over as kind of an exchange type program, but it's mostly students from Vietnam that have gotten accepted into a pretty prestigious program there at a university called Foreign Trade University. And when they finish the program, they do some classes over there, and then many of them come to Fort Collins here in Colorado, at Colorado State University, and study for a couple of semesters. And when they're finished with the whole program, they actually receive a degree from Colorado State University. So it's kind of a hybrid, half and half kind of a thing. There's maybe 8 or 9 different classes that are taught over there to the students. And they're taught by faculty from Colorado State University. And it's my turn. So,
and is Melissa going to that one?
We're all going. So
all six kids and Melissa and you?
Mm-hmm.
Holy
it
moly.
I figured it was a once-in-a-lifetime adventure for everyone. So we're going to all stay over there, and they're going to learn what it's like to be in Vietnam versus Fort Collins.
So when you come back and you're having a stressful day, you can go, oh, my God, this is like when I was in Nam.
I could, I guess. I don't expect it to be too stressful, though. It should be fun while we're over there. I only teach one class, so it's not a real full semester like I would have here. So we'll have a lot of time to explore and learn about the culture. And
good.
Yeah.
Let me know how their food is.
It's supposed to be great. Supposed to be great. Kind of that they have a French influence there.
Yes, yes.
The French were
very influential.
Left behind a lot of their culinary influences. So it's kind of a strain, kind of an Asian French.
Let me know if
fusion.
You eat anything exotic.
Probably will,
like
not
crickets.
Not knowing it. I may not volunteer
Beatles.
For anything strange, but they do have some strange things over there.
Yeah. Be interesting.
I'll let you know.
Okay. All right, well, it'll be good. We'll have a lot to talk about when you get back, but that's some of the things that Chris is doing.
So will the radio show be canceled while I'm gone? Or?
Well, no, we're going to have to figure something out, because if you're going to be gone the entire month of June, we can either... You're going to have to teach Justin sooner or later how to run all that recording junk you got there.
I talked to him about it. He wasn't real excited about it.
There's a lot of things he doesn't get very excited about, but...
but he made some comment about, in all my free time...
Yeah, I think that was more directed towards me. But he is going to be busy because he's starting the tax preparation and tax planning business. For those who don't know, we always often talk about Justin. We intend to have him on the radio more. He is going for his enrolled agent designation. He's been working with us now for about 2.5 years. It'll be 3 years, I think, in August or September. And he's a really fine young planner. He is very, very smart, very good, very dedicated, young. He is in his early 30s. I think he's 32, 33. So he's perfect for Chris and I. Chris is almost 60, and I'm in my early 50s. You're older than me, right? Just humor me.
Sure.
But one of the things Justin volunteered for, and this was his volunteer, tierism there, Chris, not me. Mm-hmm. I didn't push him in it. I told him that I wanted to start doing far more tax analysis for our clients because I was getting very discouraged and disappointed with some of the tax preparers, tax advisors that clients were using. They just don't either care, understand, or really pay attention to decisions people make today. How are they going to impact them tax-wise in retirement? So many people don't pay attention to that, both on the taxation of their Social Security, the amount of required minimum distributions they're going to have to take. Nobody's paying attention. What happens, not only the massive RMDs you're going to have to take from your retirement accounts when you retire, what happens when you pass away and your spouse inherits that account? We have to look at that. We call it the widow-widower's penalty, the tax compression that happens in the sense that you no longer are filing married. Within 3 years of death, you're going to be filing single, and those tax brackets are going to compress, Chris. But because spouses can inherit retirement accounts and treat them as their own, and if the spouse is not more than 10 years younger, and most aren't, the RMDs really don't change. Mm-hmm. So you're going to inherit the account, you're going to treat it as your own, but the amount of money you're being forced to take out at the death of the first spouse pretty much continues. It's only going to be taxed at a higher bracket subject to more taxation. And then what happens to that account when that last spouse dies and a non-spouse beneficiary inherits it, usually your children? The tax preparers and tax gurus who are helping our clients were never looking at a lot of that. And some of the advice we were sharing with our clients they should do was either being shot down or just not implemented. So I told Justin, enough is enough. We are retirement planners here. This is what we do. It's our area of specialty. And I said, I'm hiring either an enrolled agent or a CPA. And then a few days after that conversation with him, he shared with me he always was interested in taxes, and he said he'd like to be that person, and could he go get his enrolled agent designation? For those listeners who don't know what an enrolled agent is, it's one of the designations in taxes next to a CPA that I respect. An enrolled agent is they study, they have to take a series of courses, and then they're tested by the IRS. I don't think the IRS actually administers the test. The IRS has created them, but Justin went to one of those testing centers,
yeah,
and the test is there, so he doesn't go to the IRS for the test. But the IRS has produced these tests. Justin will pass them. He's passed the first of three, and then he becomes enrolled by the IRS to represent people in front of the IRS on tax matters, and also he gains the knowledge of being able to do tax returns and tax planning. So it's working out very, very good, and he enjoys it, and he's doing a very good job at it. And clients find the new information we're giving them so valuable, Chris, when we're reviewing a retirement analysis and showing them the planning opportunities that they're going to have to do, and in the timeline they have these opportunities to reduce required minimum distributions. And when I start explaining to them, Chris, the rules on inheriting retirement accounts, especially for non-spouse beneficiaries, they're shocked, Chris, at how much their IRA is going to be lost to income taxes. Everyone thinks of estate taxes, estate taxes, estate taxes. The Republicans want to repeal the estate tax, which I think is BS, only because it's now impacting just 0.7% of American society. Trust me, those people can afford to hire the attorneys necessary to avoid a lot of the estate tax. Don't concentrate on getting rid of the estate tax. I feel they should concentrate on getting rid of the widow-widower's penalty, where middle-class people are being nailed at the death of the first spouse. And if your tax preparer isn't talking to you about this, if they're just trying to reduce your taxes today, that is so short-sighted. I tell people, who was it? Wasn't it Newton, for every action is a reaction?
Yes.
And I tell clients that every time you, as a 45, 50, 55, 60-year-old, do something, Chris, to reduce your taxes today, what do you think is happening?
You're paying less tax.
But who are you today, ultimately sending that tax bill to?
Well, if it's tax decisions regarding retirement accounts and things that are going to happen in the future, you're pushing the bill off, you're kicking the can down the road and putting the bill on the older
you. The older you.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anything you do today to reduce your taxes may very well, not all the time, but most of the time, be sticking the older you with less flexibility, more taxes, not only more RMDs, required minimum distributions, which would be subject to income taxes. Those RMDs, Chris, often push your Social Security into the taxation realm. Because at best, if you do it right, your Social Security could be 100% tax-free. But if you don't do planning, it might be subject to as much as 85% to income taxes and only 15% tax-free. For every action, people, there is a reaction. So everything you do now to reduce your taxes as a 50, 55, 60-year-old, even a 65-year-old, you're really just sticking it to the 75, 80, 85-year-old you. And as retirement planners, this is what we do. I often say to people, whether it's at a coffee and a second opinion or if it's at a client review, I may be talking to the 55-year-old you. I am advocating for the 75, 85, and 95-year-old you. If your tax preparers, if your advisors aren't talking like this to you, if you're listening to this show, I mean, it is called the Retirement and IRA Show, I gotta assume you're interested in retirement planning. If you are not paying attention to this, if you're just blindly shoveling money into 401ks and IRAs and TSPs and 457s, and you're not paying attention to what type of tax bracket you may be in the future, if you're not paying attention to what's going to happen when you pass away or your spouse passes away and there's only one of you left, and if you're not paying attention to what's going to happen when your hard-earned assets inside these retirement accounts are finally inherited by your kids, we see this all the time, Chris, and I know you've seen it. You're shaking your head. Yes, up to half of that IRA can be lost to income taxes. To the middle class, we're not talking wealthy people here.
Right.
We're talking regular middle class people like you and I. We are screwed all the time, folks. If you ever look at the tax bracket, did you ever notice the biggest jump in the tax code is from 15 to 25%? That's a 66% increase in taxes. Who the hell do you think that hits the most? The middle class. When you go from 33 to 36%, oh, horror. I got to pay less than 8%, about 8% more in taxes. Oh, gee, oh, boy. But when you go from 15 to 25, you get nailed with 66% more taxes. The middle class is screwed constantly. You got to start looking out for this, folks. So anyways, I kind of went down a rabbit hole here. But that's why Justin is now doing the tax planning, because I got so frustrated, Chris, of people. And that's one of the things in this 12 reasons.
I bet the tax question is one of those 12.
It is, and I'm going to pull it up right now. Since we were going to talk about 12 reasons according to Kiplinger's personal finance, you will go...
you could go broke.
You could go bankrupt in retirement.
Broke, not bankrupt.
Well, see, you got me saying now.
Sorry. I knew it was a B word, but I didn't have it in front of me, so I couldn't read it.
Well, it's technically taxes in here. They call it, you tap the wrong retirement accounts. That's what they call it. But the description is, as you take money out, you're not paying attention to the taxation of the money in those accounts, and it's causing other tax issues with your income stream, specifically Social Security. So we'll talk about that, but that too is one of the reasons Kiplinger's Personal Finance wrote 12 reasons you will go broke in retirement.
And the reason why we look at this is that people get so hung up on how much have they saved, how much is in an account, how much is available. It's really more about how much do you have ultimately available to spend in your retirement. And you only get to spend what's left after taxes, penalties, increased Medicare premiums, all of those things get factored in. So if you're focusing on just the gross amount before all these other things, you're missing half the equation. You're missing half the stuff that goes on before you get to the number that you actually get to spend. I don't care how much you've saved. It's more about how much you're going to actually get to spend of that amount. And you've got to pay attention to the rest of this, the rules regarding taxes. And now that we've got this essentially means testing for Medicare premiums that didn't used to be around but now is in force right now, you will pay maybe up to double your Medicare premiums. Actually, it can go higher than that, can it? Can't your Medicare premiums be more than double?
Right now, you have to be very, very high in the earnings, but yes, it can more than double.
But you can more than double your Medicare premiums. Well, if it's going to Medicare as premiums, that's less money that you have to spend. So you've got to include all of this in your planning if you want to achieve the goal of maximizing what you actually have to spend in retirement.
And most people don't. Chris is so correct. What I often tell people, getting to retirement is the easy part. Getting through retirement is the hard part. And there's an analogy in the industry on this. Climbing, you know, more people die descending Mount Everest, not climbing it. Most deaths, I didn't know this, but most deaths occur on the way down, not the way up. And the analogy is most mistakes are made in retirement, not necessarily leading up to retirement. It's easy to get to the top of the mountain. It's hard getting down. And that's what a true retirement planner can do. And some of the things that we see in this office have to do with the total ignorance of a lot of advisors on taxes and the total avoidance of any discussion by tax preparers on when they tell you, gee, I can lower your taxes today, Mr. and Mrs. Client, if you put another $12,000 in IRA, six in each one for both of you. Oh, gee, thank you, Mr. Tax Preparer. You've lowered our taxes today. But what he's not doing or she's not doing is telling you what in the hell that's going to do to you in 20 years. It's going to screw the older you. And sometimes I tell people when it comes to taxes, Chris, there's sometimes a difficult decision to make. Do you as a younger person want to pay a little bit more in taxes today to benefit the older you? You sometimes have to make that decision where you're going to say, no. I'm going to pay a little extra this year because this move is going to help me in 20 years. I do that all the time with my Roth contributions. My CPA, who does my business taxes, I've got three different businesses and real estate, and I have to hire a CPA to do all this. My CPA has given up, Chris, telling me to put money in my simple plan. She knows I'm not going to. I fund my Roth first. And I know it's costing me taxes right now. But I also know the older Jim is going to greatly appreciate what the 50-year-old Jim is doing.
And I know there's a lot of you out there thinking, well, whether I pay it now or later, I'm still going to pay it. So what's the big deal? The difference is now you might have certain flexibility. And later there's going to be other things at play that aren't in play today. Things like Social Security benefits, things like pension income that's going to be coming to you. Required minimum distributions, Medicare premiums. Those things aren't occurring today.
And you have no control over them. That's what we get clients to understand. We look at not only what we call your tax diversity, we look at what we call your your income discretion. And we show people that at 70, Chris, that's when Social Security turns on, required minimum distributions begin within 6 months. So by 70 and a half, we can have a good measure of what we call your income discretion. And people are shocked when they see they have no flexibility after that point. And they're getting all this taxable income and they have to pay taxes on it. Because RMDs begin, Social Security begins, they're getting their pension, their interest, their dividends. Their Medicare premiums are tied to all that income, and no one ever told them they're going to want some flexibility in the future, and they've given it all up.
Yep.
Okay.
So when we come back from this first break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the beginning of Social Security. This song was originally written in 1930, but has remained immensely popular. In 1935, one of the most popular versions recorded of this particular song was by Benny Goodman. And we're going to hear his take on this song when we come back here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is Body and Soul, this time performed by the Benny Goodman Trio. It was recorded back in 1930. This recording is from 1935 as we look back to the beginning of Social Security, which started in August of 1935. That song's been recorded by many, many people. Most fairly recent one, Tony Bennett and Amy Winehouse recorded a duet
Amy
on that.
Amy Winehouse, really?
Right, just a few months before she passed
died?
Away.
Okay.
Yeah, that was... her final recording, actually, before her death, was that song right there.
She was a train wreck waiting to happen. It was sad.
It was sad. Very talented, but...
Very, very talented, but you could see it coming. When it happened, it did not surprise me, which was sad. Sad within itself.
So we're back here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We, in the first segment, ended up talking about paying attention to taxes, not today's taxes necessarily. And as we move into tax season, this is on everyone's mind, I would think. And it's not just about what your taxes are today, but what your taxes are going to be when you retire. And as a 20 or 30-year-old, this probably isn't of great concern, but once you get into your 40s, 50s, and 60s, your decisions today with regards to certain elements of your tax situation might end up biting you in ways you didn't anticipate in retirement. So you need to be working with either a tax preparer, which would be rare that they would be considering this. In my experience, it is the rare tax preparer that's talking about anything but what they can do for you this year. I'm not saying they're not out there, but a capable retirement planner should absolutely be discussing this so that you can, I guess, coordinate your tax decisions today with your tax preparer with what your overall retirement plan looks like in the future.
And then the two of you, not you and your tax preparer, folks, you and the older you are going to have to sit down and have a powwow and decide how much taxes is the younger you going to pay and how much taxes is the older you going to pay. And again, I'm not trying to sound hokey. It truly is important. And anyways, I don't want to beat that horse anymore. Well, it's already dead and we're hitting it, but whatever the hell that saying is. Did I say it right? Beat that dead horse?
We're not going to.
We're not going to beat the dead horse
anymore, right?
Right. We didn't beat it to death like I used to say.
No, we did not do that.
Right.
That
I used to say until
Chris... The
horse
died of natural causes.
I used to say we beat that horse to death.
It actually, the euphemism implies that we beat it when it was alive to death.
And then we're still,
beating it, which is futile. We're going on and on when we don't need to. That's the implication. For the record, we didn't do either.
No horse was
harmed
in the production of this radio show.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I'll get off my little high horse on that. But,
too many horses on the show.
See, there was another saying, and I hit it right. But we will bring Justin on more to start talking about some of these tax issues, what we call the tax void, and the planning opportunities you have from the minute you retire to around age 70. And then after age 70, because you have very little income discretion at that point, folks, required minimum distributions begin, Social Security, if you have delayed it, will begin, your pension will have already begun. All these income streams are coming in top it off with the required minimum distributions, which some listeners on this show, Chris, based on their emails, we've told them, they're going to have 100, 150, 100, I think the highest we've ever had from a listener on this show, not in our office, we've had much higher, $158,000 was the estimated amount of their RMD when we figured it out for them. These are some serious required minimum distributions that give you no income discretion, essentially, to take advantage of planning opportunities to get money out of these accounts when you can at much lower tax rates. And sometimes people bristle. Is that right? Bristle?
That's a sprout. They bristle.
Bristle. Sometimes people, and you didn't laugh at me. Thank you.
No.
You're getting very
mature.
I'm
holding it in.
Oh. Sometimes people bristle at paying taxes today. Oh, I'm not going to convert. I got to pay 25% in taxes. But they're totally ignoring that when they're in their 70s, they're going to be in the 28 or 33% bracket because of all the money they're amassing in these retirement accounts. And they think they're doing themselves a favor. So anyways, that's kind of what advanced tax planning for retirees will look at. Yeah. Let's get to the Kiplinger's article. And when we get to the tax part, we'll skip it since we pretty much kind of covered that topic. But this kind of intrigued me. When I logged on to my computer, I go to Yahoo Finance most mornings just to check things out. And they will flash, you know, little catchy articles. And when I saw that, I thought, gee, this is interesting. So I downloaded it. Quickly read it. It's interesting. It's fun. It's very short. We'll add a little bit more info. But a lot of what they list here are common mistakes. Instead of 12 reasons you will go broke in retirement, I think it should be 12 common mistakes retirees make that could cause them to go broke in retirement. Now, I am sure the editor would feel that is much too long of a title. Yeah. But that is probably how it should have been worded. Because these are more mistakes people make, Chris. And they're very common mistakes that could cause them to outlive their money. Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest fear people have. Outliving their assets and becoming a ward of the state or a burden to their children. That's people's biggest fear. And what they also fear, and I'm not immune to this, and neither is Chris, because we do this for a living. I'm sure he's thought of it, because I know I have. We know in ourselves, as this happens, Chris, we're going to be old and vulnerable as well.
Old and what?
Old and weak. Vulnerable. Vulnerable.
Vulnerable?
Don't, no, you're not, get your hand off that. You're not clicking anything.
I'm about to click something.
No, don't click nothing.
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
There you go.
There I do. I got it. What did I say?
Vulnerable.
No, there's an L in there.
There is.
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable. That's okay. A little dramatic, but...
It's like I'm Italian.
Vulnerable.
It's like I'm an Italian.
Yeah, there you go. Think Italian when you say that word.
Vulnerable. Okay, so as you age and get vulnerable, and you may not be able to take care of yourself, now you worry even more about living your assets and becoming a burden to your children or a ward of the state. So what Kiplinger's was trying to do in this article is point out a few things. They call them reasons. I call them mistakes. The first thing, number one to them. Now, I'm going to do this in order. I don't believe Kiplinger's listed these in order of importance, but we'll begin with number one. They put, you totally abandon stocks. And what they're talking about, and if you read now, they have two little paragraphs that they talk about it. What they're pointing out to you is, yes, you will be in a position where you become more sensitive to market volatility and risk and losing your money, but you can't give up totally on owning some equities in your portfolio, if anything, to keep pace with inflation.
Yeah, historically, equities or stocks have been one of the best protections, easiest to obtain protections against inflation, which inflation, of course, if you plan to live well into your retirement, you're going to experience some degree of inflation, which means things are going to get more expensive. And if your assets don't have some type of growth piece to them, you're going to erode and have less purchasing power or ability to spend money and buy things as you age, and you want to prevent that so that your lifestyle, your standard of living doesn't just continually decline through your retirement. There's a variety of ways of doing that, but just abandoning stocks without any other inflation buffers built into your plan is not a good idea. And that's what they're pointing out.
Right. And they point out in the article, your portfolio needs to last 20 or 30 years. So you do need some stock allocation. One thing they don't mention in the article here, and we've talked about it on previous shows, is people still get fearful when they see the markets dropping. So we try to get people to pay attention, not just to their risk tolerance, but their risk capacity. What we mean by risk capacity, folks, is if a certain portfolio were to drop, would it impact your retirement lifestyle? Well, how do we create risk capacity so that if your portfolio dropped, it's not going to impact your retirement lifestyle? It's very easy. We call it bucketing. I've also used the analogy of the hulls of a ship. In other words, you can either literally, Chris, take your portfolio and break it into 3, 4, 5 smaller ones, literally by having 3, 4, 5 different accounts. Or if you have just one big account, put certain allocations and mentally say, these holdings are for this, these holdings are for that, these holdings are for the other thing. What bucketing, they use the analogy of buckets. You put some money in this bucket, some money in that bucket, some money in that bucket. It's just a way for people to really do mental accounting. And it appeals to a person's what we call behavioral finance, their behavioral relationship, their emotional relationship to money. I like the analogy of hulls of a ship. Years ago, when you had one hull, Chris, and that ship ran aground, it would sink. So then shipbuilders realized, well, if we put two hulls on there and we ran aground and we have a hole in our hull, a ship won't sink because the interior hull will stop it from sinking. And then they put three hulls and four hulls, multiple hulls, Chris. So we do the same thing when we help people position their portfolio. We will allocate some money to the initial spending they'll need in retirement, usually 2 to 3 years of money in spending. We call that your liquidity account. And there's the spending for the next 2 or 3 years. That's usually in a bank, Chris. And it's very liquid, very safe. You can access it when you need it. And then you'll have some money in another hull or bucket two, if you will. And that money may be money that you're going to need in 5 or 10 years. And that money will have a little more growth potential, but again, no risk of dropping in principal value. Then you'll have bucket three or hull three. That will be your investments, and that should be money you're going to need in 10 or more years into retirement. So you've created this risk capacity or these multiple hulls that if bucket one runs out, your liquidity bucket, no problem. You've got another 6, 7 years of money right there in bucket two. So if bucket three, your investments were to drop, who cares if you don't need them for 5, 10 years? So that's how you create risk capacity. And of course, bucket four or hull four, I joke with my clients, this is a hull of your ship being your retirement ship. This is a hull of your ship that Superman himself can't get through. It's made out of kryptonite. It is what we call your secure income, your Social Security, your pension, your income annuities. That is income that will continue for as long as you live. So if you did lose hull one, hull two, and eventually hull three, hull four goes nowhere. If the Titanic was made out of this imaginary hull of mine, it wouldn't have sunk. It is that that protected.
That impeg? What?
Nothing. Nothing. Okay. I'm not falling for your...
It's not me. Lone Star George told me to be on the lookout for every opportunity.
Your hand is right on that mouse, ready to try to play some stupid fish you can't pronounce where he lives. Okay, number two. And this is what
he emailed me to hope that you weren't too upset with him. for suggesting.
Notice we're not answering his question today.
Apparently not. I did notice that.
So number two, and I kind of like this with Kiplinger's article. Remember, number one, you abandon stocks. They say that's very bad. You need some growth in your portfolio. Number two, you have too much in stocks. Equally bad. And that ties into the bucketing that I just talked about.
So you should take the Goldilocks approach.
Not too hot, right? not too cold, just right.
Not too hard, not too soft, just right. Not too much, not too little, just right.
What they're saying here is if you maintain too much in very volatile investments and you are actively spending from that portfolio, that's the key. My bucketing strategy that I described to you, bucket three can be 100% equities if the person has the risk tolerance, because once we create 10 or more years of risk capacity, I'm fine with that.
And a lot of people try to say, you know, there's this rule that you should have X percentage in stocks versus bonds
based on your age. Yeah.
Those are so generic, it doesn't consider at all one 65-year-old's financial situation versus another 65-year-old's situation. If we take this rule, that would mean at 65, you'd have about 35% stocks, about 65% bonds, if you're following this rule. But what if one 65-year-old has a huge pension? They have income coming in that they don't even spend all of that every month. Should they be 35% stocks, 65% bonds? Really no need to have that kind of approach. Another 65-year-old with all they have is investments, absolutely no secure income as a backup or a partner in this retirement financing situation, then totally different situation. So your age isn't the only determinant in this. You've got to look at the whole picture, retirement planning.
Exactly. So you can have too much in equities if you do not have some sort of bucketing strategy or hull strategy, the analogy that I was using. In other words, you're mentally accounting, and you might say that pool of money over there, which is 100% stocks, Chris, let's just say someone does it. You don't have to. We're not advocating your investment pool be 100%. But if you have a little bit of your money off to the side, that's money you know you're not going to spend for 10, 15 years. You've done an analysis. You know what you're going to need. You have the first 10, 12, 15 years of retirement in very safe holding pools or buckets or hulls, whatever analogy you want to use. If you have that in place, if you've created risk capacity, it's okay to have 100% stocks at that point in your investment portfolio because you have the first 10, 12, 15 years of spending in cash, cash-like, and principal-protected assets. That's what we tell our clients to do. It's when you just have one big portfolio, Chris, and most of it is equities, because you're borrowing from the same the same strategy you used during the accumulation phase. You haven't changed now that you're in retirement, and you still get this huge pool of money in equities. That can be risky, because if it drops 20, 30, 40, 50%, and anyone who knows, if the past 17 years of this century have shown us anything, stocks can be volatile. If your portfolio drops 20, 30, 40, 50%, Chris, and you're still debiting money from it, you're going to outlive your money.
Yep.
That's called sequential risk. And that's what Kiplinger's is talking about. So you can have too much and you can have too little. You got to find the Goldilocks amount, as Chris said. Okay, number three. And I don't really know if this is bad. You live too long, Kiplinger says. I don't know if they're advocating go jump off buildings at a certain age.
No, but that increases the risk of
longevity.
Going broke.
Yes, that's what they're talking about. What Kiplinger's is talking about here is that people aren't factoring in how long they could live. And they mention the life expectancy, that the average man will live to 83, the average woman will live to 86. I think Social Security has them at 87. Yeah.
And people get so hung up on that average number.
Yeah, and they think, oh, okay, well, then no problem. I have enough money to last to then. It doesn't mean at 83 every man drops dead. Doesn't mean every woman at 86 or 87, that's it, they're done. I have clients in their 90s. I've got three of them. We have dozens and dozens in their 80s already. They're not sitting around saying, oh, Jim, man, next year I'm 83. I'm out of here. Nice knowing you. Let me shake your hand. They're living long time. And that's where bucket four, our bucket four, what we call, again, that pool of money that you cannot outlive, we call it secure income, comes in handy, Chris. Because if you do live a long time and you do outlive your assets, those bucket one, bucket two, bucket three, all your money is gone. That longevity protected pool, that secure income is always going to be there. So many people underappreciate lifetime streams of guaranteed income. They underappreciate the value of Social Security. They underappreciate their pension until they realize this is great. Eventually, you have this come to Jesus moment and they know, wow, I am lucky to have this pension and this Social Security. And they underappreciate income annuities. And I have to say, and throw my industry under the bus again, a lot of investment advisors who pretend to be financial planners, Chris, who make money on assets under management, just gathering money and charging you 1% or so to manage it, they hate annuities. Ken Fisher, his ads, I hate annuities and so should you. I feel like running an ad, I hate Ken Fisher and so should you. I don't like that approach. He just takes a very good product and throws it under the bus.
With all the bad products.
With all the bad ones.
There's a lot of bad ones.
There's a lot of bad annuities. I'll give Ken credit for that. He's bringing attention to a lot of bad annuities. But nothing beats, after Social Security and pension, nothing beats a good income annuity and using it well. We talk on this show about QLACs, Qualified Lifetime Annuity Contracts, created and sanctioned by the U.S. Department of Treasury specifically to address this. We talk about deferred income annuities, the original QLAC, so to speak, that cannot be held in an IRA, but are wonderful. QLACs can be held inside IRAs. We talk about single premium and median annuities, Chris. We talk about withdrawal benefit annuities. We talk about all these products that will continue to pay you when your money runs out.
And most of them are pretty straightforward, understandable products.
Oh, absolutely.
That don't tend to pay high commissions.
Oh, that's why they're
this
not
so. That's why they're not. So when you go to the typical place where you see these, and of course I'm generalizing, and there will be a couple of exceptions, not many, I will say that, not many. When you go and they're buying you a lavish dinner at a come and I'll feed you and share with you this way that you can buy into this product that you can't outlive. It's insurance.
Yeah, they're not selling you the cheap one.
Right. No, they're not. The reason you're getting the deluxe dinner is they're selling you the deluxe one with all the high commissions, which tend to be the most complex ones on purpose.
And pay the lowest income.
And pay the lowest income ultimately to you, the client, because the person feeding you is making a ton of money off
of it. I've told that to people working with us, and I've showed them. Mm-hmm. Here's what we charge for managing your assets. Here's what I'm going to make by putting you in this income annuity. And it's less. And I just tell them, I make far less putting you in this income annuity. But you need one. Mm-hmm. And here's why. I mean, we've done a whole analysis. Yeah. We just don't say, hey, you need an annuity, buy one from me. People will hire us. We do a retirement analysis for them. We charge a flat fee for our retirement analysis. We clearly state that any recommendation made in our retirement analysis, you're free to go anywhere and implement it. We're just giving you the recommendations. If clients want to then counsel with us about implementing some of our recommendations, they can. Those who do and they want some information and they need an income plan, we'll put the income plan together for them, and I charge them by the hour for that. I put the income plan together and I will charge them. But then I say to them, here is your income plan. Here is our recommendations. If you implement this income plan with us, I will waive this hourly fee because I am going to get paid by the income annuities when you buy them. If you want to go somewhere else with them, you're just going to pay me by the hour and you're going to tell whoever you go to, these don't let them sell you something else. These are the ones you should buy. We've done the research. We've looked at them. Here's the cost. And that way clients can feel, okay, Jim's not trying to sell me something. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay me for my time on this. I put a lot of time into this. Where you buy the income product is totally up to you. But if you buy them through us, I'm going to waive the fee it took me to put your income plan together. If you buy it from someone else, I just ask you pay me for my time of putting the plan together, and then don't let that other guy or gal sell you something different because they're probably trying to upsell you as you described.
Yep. So that music means we're coming up to our second break here. When we come back from this second break, we're going to hear the top song from this week in 1977. This week's hit was originally intended to be sung by a man, but was not. It was actually recorded and became a very, very popular hit number one this week in 1977. Brand new this week. This is a song we haven't heard, so we're getting into a time period.
Made
where
for a man, but sung by a woman.
Sure. Perfect.
It's kind of like Secret. Made for a man, but used
strong
by,
enough
strong
for a man,
for
but made
for
women.
A woman. Yeah.
Yeah. That one. Do you use Secret?
No,
strong enough?
I use Sure.
Ah, perfect. We'll be back with you right after this short break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song this week back in 1977 by Mary McGregor. You know the title of that song, Jim? It's coming up shortly here.
It takes forever.
Well, I know. I was waiting for you to guess.
Torn Between Two Lovers.
There we go. So, number one song, brand new this week. Had a different song last week. I don't even remember what it was, but...
Well, I'm glad a woman's saying it because it begins with every woman needs and she needs...
But you could twist it to be... You could just change that word. Yeah. So, this song, believe it or not, it has been done by both men and women in various languages, including Chinese. I need to look up the Chinese version of that. That's got to be interesting.
I bet we can find... I wonder if the music is the same.
That's what I'm worried. I'm curious as well. I'm at
the
a... While,
Chinese
you, while you're
version.
Talking away, I need to look at the Chinese version of Torn Between Two Lovers.
See, we won't know if it really is the Chinese version of Torn Between Two Lovers because we don't speak Chinese.
Well, it's the same melody. I think we can assume, can't we?
That'd be interesting to hear the Chinese sing Torn Between Two Lovers. Okay, so anyways, we do all this song stuff in case we have a new iTunian or new Northern Colorado listener. Off of KFKA and Greeley, if you're listening. And, of course, if you are an iTunian, that's what we call our listeners throughout the United States who download our podcast. If you're an iTunian and you have no clue why we are playing all these songs, we do it as a lead-in to Social Security. Chris and I maintain a blog called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which is an audio blog as well as a written blog. And it's also available on iTunes. So if you're ever interested in Social Security advice, you can download the podcast right from iTunes. But to lead into that, since we do a weekly update, we play songs that somehow tie into Social Security. We began with a song from 1935 because that's the year Social Security was created. Then we look at a song that hit number one 40 years ago. That's the one that Chris is just played. And we do it for 40 because when Social Security was first created, they determined your benefit way back in the 30s and 40s with a calculation they called 40 elapsed years. They now use a calculation that is named 35 computation years. And that's why in the next segment, we're going to look at the number one song from 35 years ago. So you can see how all these songs kind of tie into Social Security. And then in the beginning of the fourth segment, we will also give you an update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So that's how we came up with all that, and that's why we do that. Okay, so back to the Kiplinger's article. It was a recent article that they published on, in their opinion, the 12 reasons you will go broke in retirement. I don't really like the word reasons. I think they should have used the word mistakes retirees make, the 12 mistakes retirees make that can cause them to go broke in retirement. Did you find it?
No, it's very elusive, the Chinese version.
Chinese version. I saw you diligently looking.
Have not found the Chinese version.
Okay. Maybe you have to go to a Chinese website.
Might have to. That would be a challenge.
That would be a challenge.
Yeah.
Do you have a Chinese student?
I do.
Have him or her go to the Chinese website and get the song for us.
Oh, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, because they speak Chinese, I would assume.
They generally do, yes.
Perfect. I'm just
saying. Although that would be a good reason to come to the United States is if you were a Chinese person who couldn't speak Chinese.
True.
I'd head right on over.
Right.
I'd feel more at home if all I spoke was English.
Especially if you were in China.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so perhaps Chris's student from China will be able to get the Chinese version of Torn Between Two Lovers.
Although none of them were alive in 1977.
Yeah,
so
they're not going to know.
It might be a stretch.
Right, they're not going to know the song. You may have to play the English version for them and
ask them if it sounds familiar.
Ever hear this in China?
Yeah.
Okay, so number four on Kiplinger's list, you overspend. And that is typical. We see that. And I think it is driven mostly.
I think this falls in the common sense category.
Yes. Not having a plan. I think it's a little too simplistic of Kiplinger's to say that. Because if someone's portfolio is dropping precipitously and there's not much money left in it, you're not going to, for the most part, keep spending from it.
If you do, you'll accelerate your approach to brokenness.
Yes. But I do want to point out one huge exception to that. You will continue to spend from it if you have to. And that's why Chris and I help people as they enter retirement put together a budget. We call it a budgeting guide that we have created. It's actually the data gathering document we use when we run our retirement analysis for people. It is a 60-page document. And a good 40 of those 60 pages is dedicated to our budgeting section, where we walk you through every conceivable expense that our years of experience have shown us retirees will experience. And you just kind of fill in the blanks with what you're spending on those items. We'll assist you in trying to determine the medical side and the prescription side. We can help you with all that. But we do have to create this budget. The idea is to help you determine what your required expenses are. Those expenses that if you don't cover, you will suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. Those expenses must be covered, folks, in good times or bad. So when Kiplinger says one of the mistakes or one of the reasons you're going to go broken retirement is because you spend too much, they're really taking a very simplistic approach. What they have to get you to understand is there are going to be some expenses you can cut because they're implying you can cut these expenses. You're spending too much, therefore you must spend less. Well, there's some expenses you can't cut. If you're a Colorado listener, let's say you live in Denver and you're listening to us, you can't go into the city of Denver when you have to pay your property taxes, which in Colorado would do the end of February, the first payment. You can't walk in and say, wow, did you see the markets? Markets are down 30%. So I'm only going to pay 70% of my property taxes this year. But as soon as my portfolio recovers, I will pay the difference. You can't do that because the city of Denver will take your home. or put a tax lien on it, at least at the very least, and then eventually sell your home. But there are certain expenses you must cover. Medical expenses are another one. You have to cover them. So for Kiplinger's to imply you simply are spending too much, you have to cut your expenses, it's a little naive. We help people determine, at least in our office, what their true required expenses are. We call that your minimum dignity floor. And I usually, that was me knocking, I usually knock on my desk at that point for effect and tell them that minimum dignity floor needs to be protected at all costs because there's going to be some expenses, Chris, you just can't cut. So to imply that you're spending too much and you just have to cut expenses isn't really based on sound logic. But there are other expenses. In the office, we call those desired expenses. Those expenses are an expense we say if you don't cover, you won't suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. You will suffer an emotional loss. A huge difference. Listeners to this radio show know I like to fish, and I like to try to go to Alaska and fish. And I may go this year. I haven't decided. But in retirement, if I don't go to Alaska and fish, I won't suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. I will suffer an emotional hardship. So I could cut that expense, Chris. What we're trying to get listeners to understand is, yes, overspending is a problem in retirement. But there are certain expenses, your required expenses, that minimum dignity floor of yours, that you have to cover. No matter if the market is up or down, or more importantly, people, no matter if you have the money in your portfolio or not. And that's where people run into trouble, Chris. They don't have the money, they overspent, they ran out, and they didn't plan that bucket four, that hull four, that lifetime stream of guaranteed income. There's the trick, folks. Your lifetime stream of guaranteed income should equal, on an inflation-adjusted basis, your minimum dignity floor. That even if you outlive your assets, your Social Security, your pension if you have any, and your income annuities will cover those expenses. Because in those items, those income streams, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are pooled together and sharing the risk of overspending their assets because it's a pool of money that will last forever and will pay everyone in that pool. And that's how the secure income products, Social Security, pension, and income annuities can help you in retirement. Not everybody needs them, Chris. Some people have enough pension and Social Security. Some people have enough pension and annuity where they're going to be fine. But most people could benefit, as you know, Chris, from a little bit of a plan to put this income plan in place.
Perfect.
Okay. So it kind of ties in number five. Number five, Kiplinger says, you rely on one single source of income, and they say Social Security. And they point out that Social Security was never intended to be the sole secure income stream for retirees. So I kind of already talked about that, Chris. The secure, to us, secure income, just so you know, folks, here's our definition. You're looking at everything. Are we recording?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm fine.
Okay.
I'll let you know if there's a problem.
Okay. Well, you're pulling wires and turning knobs. And I was wondering, because there was once, for
it's
those who don't know, I spent hours recording a show.
Two.
That's hours, plural.
Yep.
Only for you to tell me after we recorded the show, you went, uh-oh. And that's never good when someone says, uh-oh.
True.
And I said, uh-oh, what? Uh-oh. And you said I did not have the mic plugged in. The mic is plugged in.
It is.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. All right. Sorry about that, folks. I'm easily distracted.
Yes, that's
it's like
for sure.
Shouting squirrel to a dog. And when I saw Chris playing with the wires, I thought we might not have been recording.
We're all good.
Okay, back to this single stream of income and what I want to talk about. Secure income to us, folks, has a three-part definition. Kiplinger's is pointing out you should not rely on just Social Security. They say you need other sources of guaranteed income. We call it secure income. To us, secure income has three parts. If it does not have all three parts, in our opinion, the way we believe in retirement planning, we won't put it in the secure category. Number one, secure income should be predetermined and known. There should be no ambiguity with it. We can tell you at 65, 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, 95, and beyond exactly what you should be receiving. Number two, secure income is never impacted by the stock market, the bond market, rising interest rates, falling interest rates, up market, down market. If secure income moves at all, it can only go higher. It can never go down. Number three, remember, you need all three elements. Secure income is not backed by your personal assets. It's backed by a deep-pocketed third party. In other words, you've passed the risk of the income on to some type of institution or some type of governmental agency. And we've just described Social Security, pensions, and income annuities. Those three elements, those three products, those three income sources, in our opinion, are truly secure because they have all three elements. And that secure income should cover your minimum dignity floor. What Kiplinger's is saying, Chris, is too many people don't rely on all three. They just rely on Social Security. They never factor a pension or an income annuity, and then they don't have enough money. Secure money.
Right.
Okay. Number six, relying on the ability to work. They just simply put it, you can't work. Mm-hmm. How many times do we hear, Chris, oh, I'm going to work to 70, 75, or 80? Mm-hmm. And that's their retirement plan.
Quite a lot. Because it does greatly reduce your need for a pile of money to retire on. Every year you can work past 65, 70, maybe 75. It does, when we look at the numbers, just this is a generalization, but usually when I looked at it, for every year you worked past 70, it usually bought you an extra 2 to 3 years in the expected longevity of your retirement accounts. So it can make a significant difference. The only trouble, which they're pointing out, of course, maybe you can't work. You have every mental, your choice mentally is that you would like to. That's your plan. But sometimes physically it doesn't happen. There is absolutely age discrimination. I've seen a number of times when people that had every skill in the world, all the experience you could imagine, can't get a job, they get laid off from one job, can't find another job. You've got downsizing that happens all the time. Usually people that are at companies that are at the top end of the experience scale, so those of you in your 50s, 60s, and maybe going into 70s, also happen to be at the top end of the payroll scale as well. So when a company's looking to trim, usually you're a very juicy target for them. So there's lots of reasons that you wouldn't be able to work past a certain age.
Exactly. And you hit the nail on the head, and I know you haven't even read the Kiplinger's article, but you did excellent because Kiplinger's points all this out. They say so many people, their retirement plan, they just say, okay, I'm going to keep working. Mm-hmm. And then the numbers look great. Mm-hmm. When they're sitting there crunching the numbers, they have themselves working to 70 or 75 or 80. It's like, oh my God, this works. I'm all set. Mm-hmm. And Kiplinger's points out the following. 60% of retirees will leave the workforce earlier than planned. Of those, 37% it'll be because of health issues. The remaining because of employment-related issues, such as organizational changes, downsizing, job loss, buyouts. And I would go ahead and write in there what you said, because we see it all the time, age discrimination. Mm-hmm. It's there. And it's hard to prove, but it's easy for the company to know. You walk in, you can't tell, they can't ask your age, but you walk in looking like a 65 or 70-year-old, I'm just telling you already, they'll sit there and interview you, but the minute you leave, I can't say in every case, but that resume is going in the circular file, not the callback file. And they didn't even have to ask your age. And it happens all the time. There are two people in my office, not in my office, two clients we're working with, both women, one in her 70s, the other in her mid-60s. Both want to work. Both have applied at countless places. And time after time after time after time, they never get the job. Mm-hmm. And they can only assume it's because of their age.
Mm-hmm. Or assumed health issues. I've known employers that have made a decision on actively choosing not to hire older people because it would drive their group health insurance premiums up. Because if the average age of their employees was too high, it drove up costs.
I mean, did you read this?
No, I didn't.
Folks, I'm not making this up. Chris can't see it.
As you pointed out, I'm super old, so I've just been around the block a few times.
The number seven reason you get sick, and they point out. Not only can't you work, you might not get hired under the assumption that you will get sick and employers are not looking for that, but they also take it one step further and talk about the amount of money you now have to spend to take care of yourself, because we've said this time and time again, Medicare does not cover everything and you've got to come up with a tremendous amount of out-of-pocket expenses, including long-term care. And then they talk about the need for long-term care and how much that's going to cost. So you nailed it. That was number seven in Kiplinger's list. Health, or you get sick, is what they call it. But yes, there could be health discrimination, especially in these employers that are self-insured. Mm-hmm. They don't want someone that's going to tap that health problem. So it exists out there. And if your retirement plan is based on you working longer, and that is the selfish. I say flat out to people, it's technically being selfish in the sense the younger you doesn't want to make any changes to your spending and saving. So you're going to stick the older you working longer, mm-hmm. and you're just going to assume the older you is going to be able to. And if the older you can't, the younger you just screwed the older you. Mm-hmm. And I just pointed out to them, mm-hmm. that's what you're trying to do. You're banking on the fact that nothing bad is ever going to happen to you. And it's naive. I have learned firsthand it's naive to think nothing bad is ever going to happen to you. When my good friend Rob died last year, age 47, that wasn't supposed to happen. Rob was supposed to be coming with me to Alaska. It wasn't supposed to happen. Bad things happen to good people. And if your whole plan is, I'm just going to keep working. That's the 40 or 50-year-old you saying, no, I'm just going to stick it to the 60 and 70-year-old me. He's not going to be able to relax either. She's not going to be able to relax either. If the 40, 50-year-old can't do the fun things, well, neither is the 60 and 70-year-old me. And I just think that's selfish. That's just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. So, yes, health can derail your retirement plan and cause you to outlive your assets in a heartbeat. So make sure, people, I know it's so easy to say, I'm never going to need long-term care. I hope you're right. But you should have a long-term care plan in place just in case. Not everyone is going to qualify for long-term care insurance, Chris. Not everyone is going to be able to afford it. Life isn't fair in that realm. But for the people who can qualify and the people who can afford it, I strongly encourage you to talk to someone or a firm or us. We do long-term care planning. We do understand all the different policies and options that are available. Long-term care coverage gets a lot of bad press, but there are a lot of good ways to manage it as well. Don't go in with a clouded mind. Go in with an open mind and just evaluate your options. Can you qualify? That's the first thing I always tell people. There's no sense even having a long-term care discussion until I know if you even can qualify. So let's just go through underwriting. We're under no obligation, but I'll get a yes or a no from an insurance company. Once I know you can be covered and I have an idea what it's going to cost, now we can do a plan and decide, do we want to move forward or not? That's our approach to retirement planning. And we adopted that because, yes, we used to put a lot of time in. People would fill in applications. We would try to figure out how much they can afford, and then they were denied coverage. And now everything has got to be thrown out. We have to start over. So my take is now, if you're interested in long-term care, I'm not saying we willy-nilly pick an insurance company and just go through underwriting. We will do, and it's not really a cursory review, we will do the first draft of your long-term care plan. Put together a policy that we think might be ideal, that might fit well, and then go through underwriting and see if you qualify. If you qualify, then we begin to refine it, because now we know if you're coverable and at what price. If you don't qualify, well, that, number one, saved you time and us time, obviously, but now exposes us to a huge risk. If you are denied coverage, it is because you are probably going to need it. And now we have to do some serious planning. The real planning begins when you're denied, because now we have to figure out how is this going to be paid for so you don't become a ward of the state or a burden to your children. It's crucial to know, and a lot of people don't want to know, but it's crucial to know, will you qualify? Only way to find out is go through underwriting. You're under no obligation. Just go through underwriting. So anyways, I don't want to get into how all that works. If anybody's ever interested in that, contact us, reach out to us. By now you should know how to reach us, JimHelps.com, JimHelps.com, or call the office and listen to, we got some woman who's going to talk in a minute usually about us, right? Don't we have those ads?
Some woman.
Well, we don't know who she is. We never even met her.
We haven't met her, but we know who she is.
Oh, you know her name?
Yeah.
Oh, don't say it. Call her Georgette.
Georgette records all those for us.
We have a professional voiceover person. How's that?
Fancy.
Okay, so when we come back, we have one, two, three, four, five more to go to, which we can get through on the 12 reasons you will go broke in retirement.
When we come back from this break, we're also going to hear the number one song from this week, 35 years ago, back in 1982. This song became an early staple on MTV and is about a man who is shocked to learn about his high school crush appearing in a men's magazine.
Ah, they're from Boston.
Men's magazines?
Jay Giles Band.
Oh, okay. So we'll find out what song this is right after the short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It was the number one song back in 1982 this week, as you pointed out. That is Centerfold by Jay Giles Band. They are from Massachusetts. Band formed back in the 1960s, actually. They played R&B, influenced blues rock in the 70s, before moving towards a new wave 80s sound, which we hear in their biggest hits, Centerfold, and what's the other one?
I know it, but I cannot remember it. What is it?
Camera? Freeze Frame.
Freeze Frame.
Remember Freeze Frame? Yeah, yep. It's another big hit from Jay Giles Band. So that is something I didn't mention at the break is... we don't have an update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
We did all this and there's no update?
Well, there's no update because I haven't done it yet because we're recording this show so early.
Oh, we're almost two weeks ahead of time. Yeah. Wow, okay. So it's a surprise.
So it'll be a surprise. Yes. Last week we talked about paper statements going away. I'm not going to revisit that, so no update. But I do like the song, our little song, so I'm going to play that.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
don't know what's new next week. What's new, Pussycat?
You know, I just realized.
Yes.
You're going to have to record buka amounts of blogs before you go to Vietnam.
Or record them and send them over.
You're going to record them in NAM and send them over?
I could. There is the internet. We'll see.
Hmm.
I don't know. Probably do it before I leave.
I think so. I think so.
Think that'd be better?
Maybe I'll record a couple with you. I haven't recorded one in like a year.
Or more.
Yeah. It couldn't have been more than a year.
I think it's a year and a half.
Is it a year and a half?
Might be.
Yeah.
It's okay. We don't miss you. I mean, we miss
you. Excuse me?
We miss you on
Excuse
the blog.
Excuse me?
People have been writing in.
I could stop doing the radio show. How about you just do the radio show?
I do the blog.
Okay, back then, since we don't have a What's New on Help
But we
my
do
Social
need time
Security,
to finish this list.
We do.
So.
We do. And again, this is because we pre-record and Chris is busy all next week. So we are actually pre-recording almost 10 days out of whack here. And again, if something major happens over the next 10 days, and with Trump in the White House, that could be at any moment now, as people like to joke. But I often say we're now one tweet away from a major market drop.
140 characters.
Just took it all down. But we never know. If something happens over the next 10 days and you're wondering, gee, I wonder why these two haven't even mentioned this major news event. It's because we're recording this about 10 days before it actually will play. Okay, so let's get to number 8, which number 8 and 9 kind of tie into the first part of the show already. Kiplinger says number 8 is you tap the wrong retirement accounts, and number 9, you don't consider taxes. Number 8 actually ties into what Chris and I talked about in the entire first segment. Tapping the wrong retirement accounts and not paying attention to the tax implications of those retirement accounts. So I'm not going to rehash that. Number 9, where they said you don't consider taxes, when I first read that, I was wondering, well, what are they talking about? Because they already talked about taxes in number 8. Do you know what they, can you guess or think what they might be talking about when they say you don't consider taxes? Because it's not money coming out of retirement accounts. They cover that in number 8.
I could be any number of things, I guess.
It's one thing that I don't think people are going to actively do. They say you don't consider the taxation of the state you live in, and you could relocate to a lower
relocation,
right? Mm-hmm. A lower taxed state. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They list the best states: Florida, Arizona, Alaska, Georgia, and Nevada for retirees. I was surprised to see Alaska. I thought it was expensive up there, and I don't see many retirees.
Well, from a tax standpoint, was that just for taxes, or
yeah,
is that
taxes,
overall?
Taxes. I don't see many retirees pointing their car north.
That's a rough living.
driving to Alaska for retirement, although yours truly would consider that. I don't quite know. Now, Florida and Arizona, my mom and sister just bought a house together in Florida. I wonder how that's going. I haven't heard from them in like 2 weeks.
Are they still getting along?
I have no idea.
That can be challenging. Co-owning something.
I have not heard from them. I don't even know if mom listens to the show anymore. They were all excited. My sister was driving down. My mother was flying down. They were going to their new house together, and boom, it's like they dropped off the face
of the
earth.
Your mom's probably sick of listening to the show. She has been listening since day one.
Moms never get sick of their children. At least moms who love their children.
Okay.
So I have no idea if she listens anymore. I guess I could. Mom, if you listen, tell me you heard this.
You haven't called in such a long time.
Well, I know they're alive because they're still playing Words with Friends with me.
Oh,
but
that's your family connection through an app on your iPad playing Scrabble.
But I don't know how this whole living together in the same house in Florida is going 2 weeks into it.
How'd it go when you were children? Did your mother and daughter, your mother and sister get along?
I think so. I can't remember.
What do you think so? You didn't grow up in your own house?
I did, but that was a long time ago. I think there was the typical teen years where they probably
you have to throw those out.
Yeah.
You have to ignore that. You have to pretend that never happened.
The teen years, yes. Yeah. But anyways, what Kiplinger's is advocating in their number 9 is to consider moving to a low-cost state, or not considering moving to a low-cost state could cause you to outlive your money. I have to draw the line here. Some people just won't relocate. They mm-hmm. want to be near their family, their friends, their homes, mm-hmm. What they're used to. And yes, maybe they could. If they're that close to running out of money, Chris, moving to a low-cost state isn't going to buy them the rest of their life. Oh, gee, if I just move to Nevada, I'm all set. It might buy them another year or two if you ignore the cost of actually moving. But I think they're kind of reaching on this one. That's my personal take. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think it's a reach practically. It's great on paper. I think if you look at it and not cost of living's less, taxes are less, this could save you if you went here. But up and moving, of all, what's retirement worth if you don't get to do the things you want, live where you want, be around the people you want, see your family, that sort of thing? That usually is the overriding factor. So I agree. The practicality of this, very few people will be able to just choose where they're going to live to retire. Some do, but usually there's at least a connection. Maybe they've got, I've got family in this state, I've got some in this state, or this state's kind of in the middle, and if I'm going between two states, maybe the taxation situation will be enough to sway me one way or another. So it certainly is part of it. It's not ignored, but I don't know that it's going to be an overriding factor.
Yeah. Okay, number 10, this is a difficult one. I have seen some people in this situation refuse to change, and I have seen people say, I'm done.
Mm, give up golfing?
Negative.
Oh.
And you will probably be able to relate to this.
Uh-oh.
Constantly bankrolling your kids.
Mm. I don't do that.
When do you pull the plug and say, I've got to take care of my finances, I can't do this for you? Now, there are some people who will have the money, and Kiplinger's acknowledges this, and you can help your children, and they say, start a business or do other things. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about people where you don't really have the money to be able to do this anymore, and they still do. I will go one step farther and say, not just bankroll the kids, charities as well. I have seen this with tithing. I have seen people refuse to stop, and it costs them dearly financially. I think there sometimes comes a point where the church would acknowledge, you can't anymore. Thank you for all the help you've given us, but you must help yourself at this point. I have seen one other person in the office not tithing to her church in this particular client's case, just charitably giving in general, where it was truly hurting her financially. And she recently stopped and shared with me that she now realizes she should have stopped sooner. And also she feels the one particular charity that she used to support strongly may have actually been taking advantage in the sense of always making her feel important and taking her out and doing these things for these contributions to continue. And we see this. I see it anecdotally, obviously, because I'm sharing a few help me out here. No. Don't click
all
it.
All new explorers must answer a science question.
Okay.
You live in what kind of home?
In an anemone.
Okay, don't hurt yourself. Welcome aboard, explorer.
You're going to share anonymous stories.
Thank you. For those who don't know, everyone doesn't know because this is not TV, Chris was laughing like a 12-year-old as he was playing that song.
Well, we made it all the way to the fourth segment before I got to play the little thing for Lone Star George. Yeah.
But what I am sharing, or trying to share before you had to poke fun at my inability to pronounce certain words.
That contain N and M.
And pretty much a lot of other letters, too.
Yes.
We're beginning those to
are
realize.
Those are the pinnacle of the challenge, though. Any M and N in the same
but there
word,
was that
it's
other
trouble.
One,
it's
that,
trouble.
The other one the other day. That one, I've been practicing that, and I still have a hard time.
There's so many. I don't recall which one it is, but that's okay.
The one where students will choose what courses they're going to take.
Curriculum?
That one.
Mm.
That one stumped me.
You've been
me.
Practicing that one?
I've been trying to, yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure that's one you need to use much. Anonymous, though, comes up quite frequently.
Quite often,
might
yes.
want to practice that one.
That one. But that forget it. No, because you got the M and the N in it. That just...
I know.
That's an evil word. But it's not just bankrolling children where you can run in trouble. It's when you constantly bankroll other things as well and not pay attention. I have read, I have seen, I have shared in my years of doing this where people, some people, truly like the attention that donating money gives them, that they donate far more than they can afford. And they want, because we are a societal creatures. We talk about this. We have talked about it on previous shows. And one of the things when people retire, they share, they no longer like not feeling as if they're contributing. Mm-hmm. So I am not saying charities prey on this. That's not what I'm saying at all. But people do like the attention they get when they donate money a lot. They get invited to a dinner or they're thanked at a meeting or something. And then they're constantly, hey, they're called and taken out and we'll do this for you and that for you. Because the charity or the institution receiving the money wants it to continue. And I think they're just trying to be nice. The charities are just trying to be nice. The institutions are trying to be nice. And it feeds into itself, and it causes some people, Chris, to donate far more than they should. So Kiplinger's doesn't talk about that. I'm talking about it because I see it. Listeners, you should look at it, especially if you have power of attorney and you're trying to help your elderly parents. If you see that they're struggling financially, but they're still giving a lot, you have to sometimes talk openly about that. And a lot of times they're not going to want to stop because they like the attention. It makes them feel, Chris, as if they are contributing again and they're needed and they're wanted. And that's a very powerful human emotion. And it's hard sometimes for those people to get over it, but it hurts them financially.
Yeah, it's almost an addiction in some cases. They're just they get something from that they just can't feel like they give up, even though it's harming them financially. So
you have to watch that, even with tithing to your own church.
And I would say that those may be in a best position might be children of 60, 70, 80-year-olds. Because
yes.
You might be able to observe objectively from outside this going on where they will never see it of themselves. So another thing to watch out for. I wouldn't call it a form of elder abuse, unless someone is guilting someone aggressively into giving, but it's certainly something that can end up harming them with, and it'd be nice if you helped them through that.
Okay, number 11, you remain underinsured. This was interesting because it was mainly dedicated towards Medigap policies, the supplemental policies that one must purchase to help shore up Medicare. And they point out that Medicare isn't going to cover everything. And you still have to get a supplement policy. You have to get a prescription Part D policy. It's not going to pay for vision and dental. Should you consider those policies or not? Chris and I are very hesitant on those, especially dental policies. As you pointed out, they're really just prepaid plans, kind of like the old Christmas clubs of years ago where people would put money in all throughout the year, and then at Christmas time they'd have the money to buy gifts. A lot of these dental and vision policies that they try to sell to seniors, really, if you look at the amount of leverage the insurance is really buying, you're kind of prepaying for an eventual dental need. Mm-hmm. But Kiplinger's is talking about the need to make sure you're paying attention to your insurance. And then, of course, they do mention the importance of having long-term care insurance if you can afford it. We talked about that in previous segments. But they also mention that a lot of elderly people, as they get older, remain underinsured on their autos and homes, that as they get older, they're more prone to accidents, and they have to view those policies, those property and casualty policies, a little differently. You're going to have older people coming to visit you more at your home. Could be accidents there, slips and falls and things like that, where friendships can all of a sudden be ruined when high medical bills are coming in.
So one's going to want to make sure that their property and casualty insurance on their autos, on their homes, add an umbrella liability policy to your home. These were all good points they were making. And I added a lot of my own points in this. If you actually read the article, some of the things I just mentioned, Kiplinger's isn't. But we do encourage clients to look at that and to make sure they're taking that into account, that as they age, some of these things often overlooked and ignored, and they might lead to a very high out-of-pocket expense that could have been offset or fully covered with proper insurance.
Right, and it's a lot of times, say on your, you mentioned automobile insurance, the minimums required by the states, and this is probably more a general suggestion rather than just aimed at retirees, that the minimum liability coverage required by states oftentimes doesn't keep pace with the cost of the other cars you might damage if you get in an accident, if it's your fault. In Colorado, there's certain limits, only $50,000. It doesn't take very long for you to cause more than $50,000 worth of damage to a person or property, and you'll suddenly find yourself very uninsured or underinsured being sued for the difference. So make sure that your limits, talk openly with your insurance agent about these protections so that you don't find yourself underinsured.
And it's sad, but as we age, our ability to drive does diminish greatly. I joke with my dad that he drives by feel. And I cringe. I won't drive with him when I go home. I drive. But sometimes I just, for fun, last time I went home, I looked at his bumper and there was yellow paint on it. He had no clue. Problem is, he drives a blue car. And says, "Dad, where'd you get the yellow paint?" What do you mean you don't know?
Well, maybe somebody hit him.
I think you should know. The way it looked, it did not look like a hit of him. So I joke with him. I says, "Dad, you're driving by feel." And it gets to the point where family members have to acknowledge this and up the insurance if you can't get the keys from them. And it's often overlooked, and it's important to make sure that we do that. And we see sad cases. I see a lot. There's been several in Colorado of elderly people thinking they're hitting the brakes and they hit the gas and they go through buildings. And there was that very sad case where the 81 or 83-year-old man hit the children and killed the 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. And then he died a few weeks later. And it was sad because I bet you he died over just the fact of what he did. I can't have any proof on that. I didn't know him, but I had heard on the news that he had passed away because they were going to charge him. It's sad, and you have to recognize that. So make sure you're paying attention, listeners, to your insurance. And, of course, if you are in your 50s and 60s, most people listening to us are probably in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, somewhere around there, and they're do-it-yourselfers. So we're talking more so pay attention to your parents. See if they need to up things on their own insurance. Okay. And then the final one. Do you have any idea what this is? And I'll give you a few hints as you think about it. It is tied to something that I truly believe in, and I have shared with listeners repeatedly is probably going to happen to them, or they will be, not necessarily happen to them, but they will definitely be at a point in their lives where this could happen to them. We've talked
about
this.
That's pretty generic.
Let's see if I can give you a better hint. No, it's. I think that was a good hint. Most people, as they age and go through retirement and age, will become vulnerable to this. Mm-hmm. See, I said it.
Elder abuse, financial abuse.
Yep, scamming.
Scams.
So the very last thing Kiplinger says, you get scammed. And this is something that I take very seriously. It has helped form our secure retirement income process, Chris. We talk openly of the Harvard study of the human brain on why elderly people become the victims of financial fraud. We talk openly about elder abuse and that more money is stolen from elderly people through fraud and scams than at the barrel of a gun. And that the Harvard study has shown the part of our brain that understands financial concepts is one of the last to develop and first to degrade. And when they graphed it, it was a bell curve shape. And it helps explain, yes, why my young 20-something-year-old nephew was making poor money decisions in his early to mid-20s. And now he's smartening up as he's getting into his late 20s, I'm pleased to say. That part of my nephew's brain is going to continue to mature and get stronger all the way up to age 53. That, according to Harvard, is the pinnacle age of when the human brain can understand financial concepts. And then it starts degrading after that. It's not a cliff. You're not dumb as a brick at 54. It's just starting to degrade, and it increases in speed as you get into your 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that's what Kiplinger's is talking about here. You've got to take this seriously, folks. And it's why Chris and I believe vehemently in our secure retirement income process, why our process operates the way it does, and why we tell people the younger you needs to put in place a plan to take care of the older you. And that plan needs to be simple. And we're going to talk more about this on next week's show.
Yep, simple and robust. And
we'll get into our process, why we believe in it, and how to structure a good retirement plan.
Perfect. So that music means we are at the end of another show. Been great to have you with us today. We'll be back next week with another brand new show. I'm not sure when we're going to have our next live show, but we are always welcoming emails if you want to send them. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email address, or you can just go to jimhelps.com and contact us through the contact page right there on the website. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.